Welcome to the 73 Dream Studios Variety Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Mystery Motel. It's me, Ray. And today, we are going to be covering The Maltese Falcon, specifically the film adaptation that was released in 1941. Some quick facts about this film. The director was John Huston. The screenplay was done by John Huston, based on The Maltese Falcon novel by Dashiell Hammett. The cinematographer was Arthur Edison. Editor was Thomas Richards. Music was done by Adolf Deutsch. It was produced by Warner Brothers and distributed by Warner Brothers. Released October 18th, 1941, with a runtime of 1 hour and 41 minutes. Has a budget of $375,000. Had a box office of $1.8 million. As I go over the plot, there's going to be some key characters that we're going to look at here. That cast is made up of Sam Spade, as played by Humphrey Bogart, Ruth Wonderly / Bridget O'Shaughnessy, played by Mary Astor, Iva Archer, played by Gladys George, Joel Cairo, played by Peter Lorre, Barry McLean as Lieutenant Dundee, Lee Patrick as Effie Perrine, and Sidney Greenstreet as Casper Gutman. All right, so we got the cast out of the way, we got our quick facts out of the way, now we gotta move on to the plot. Maltese Falcon, 1941. We get some nice introductory text appearing after the film's opening credits. I have it written down right here. In 1539, the Knight Templars of Malta paid tribute to Charles V of Spain by sending him a golden falcon encrusted from beak to claw with the rarest jewels. But pirates seized the galley, carrying this priceless token, and the fate of the Maltese Falcon remains a mystery to this day. And then we're introduced to San Francisco, modern day being 1941, with the office of Spade and Archer, that being Sam Spade and Miles Archer. And they meet a prospective client, Ruth Wonderly, damsel in distress, talking about, "Oh no, my sister ran off with this man, Floyd Fursby. I need you guys to follow this man and follow my sister and just figure this out, please." Like, and she like begged them and offered them money. I believe she offered them $200. And after she leaves, there's like a quick conversation. There's a lot of fast talk in this movie between Sam and Miles, where basically they're like, "Yeah, we don't necessarily, you believe this? No, but our money's good. What do you want to do?" And Miles like, "Yeah, I'll tail her." So late, we get a quick shot of Miles tailing her, and then he's shot by someone off screen, falls over a fence, and just dies eventually. Later on, Sam would get the call. He would call Effie, and I think it was Effie that he calls. He calls someone. It's either Effie or it's Ruth / Bridget, but we don't know she's Bridget yet. As far as we know, she's Ruth. And Sam goes to the crime scene, literally deduces everything just by looking at the scene of a crime. And there's some talk, though, that maybe he killed, he talks to the lieutenants a bit. And later on that day, he does find out from Detective Paul House and Lieutenant Dundee that Fursby, the man that Archer was following, was also murdered that same evening. So now they're suggesting that Spade had the opportunity and motive to kill Fursby, who is likely the one that killed Archer. And then we're also introduced to this little subplot where apparently it's believed that, like, I guess Archer's widow Iva visits the office and she thinks that Spade shot Miles so that Sam Spade could have Iva. And at first I wasn't sure what they meant by that, but then even the cops are like, "Oh no, like, you know, like, she was trying to get a divorce from him so that she could be with you, but he wouldn't have it." And I'm just like, hold up, did he really have an affair with his partner? And like, are we just going to gloss over that? Like, they dedicate maybe 3 scenes to this subplot, and I feel like it was not fleshed out nearly as much as it should have been. Later on, Spade will meet the woman who is, whose real name, as far as we know, is Bridget O'Shaughnessy. She's very reluctant to reveal the whole truth. Like Sam literally gets up to leave. And I remember one scene where he tries to call her out because she's like, oh, what do I have to get? What do I have to do to earn your loyalty? And he's like, what have you given me? You've given me nothing but the lies and half-truths. All you've ever given me is money. How loyal should I be to you? And she's like, all I have to bribe you with is money. What more could I give you? And then he kind of like grabs her and forcefully kisses her. Which I guess is supposed to imply that these two are in love, because they mentioned that they love each other multiple times, and I'm just like, I don't think you do, though. Anyway. So, Bridget also admits, yeah, Fursby probably killed Archer, but she has no idea who killed Fursby. Eventually, Spade agrees to investigate the murders, because she pays him another $500. And as office, Spade meets a man I believe he's supposed to have, like, an Egyptian ethnicity. He's called Joel Cairo. And he offers him $5,000 to find the Black Bird, which, we as we know, is the Maltese Falcon. And he refuses to reveal who he's working for. He then tries to stick up Sam Spade and search his office, but Sam doesn't have it, knocks him out, like, takes the gun. And Joel Cairo's just like, okay, well, I still want to hire you. Like, I just wanted to search your office in case you had it. And Sam Spade's like, all right, fine. If your money's good, I'll work for you still. And I found it really hilarious because he gives the gun back to Cairo. And then I thought that the film skipped back for a second. Like, I was getting deja vu because then Cairo's sticking him up again. And is like, I'm going to search this office. And Spade's like, whatever, whatever. Let's just get this over with. Eventually, we find out that O'Shaughnessy and Cairo know each other, and they know a mutual associate known as the Fat Man, who's apparently like a crime boss or something. And this whole time, Sam Spade's also being tailed by some hitman called Wilmer. Eventually, Sam Spade will meet with the Fat Man, known as Casper Gutman, in his hotel suite. Gutman talks about the Maltese Falcon evasively, but so eventually Sam like loses his shit, and it seems really out of nowhere. I was like, man, but that doesn't seem like him. He seems like an even cool-headed guy. And eventually he laughs after he's left, so it's implied that he really just like threw that tantrum to throw the guy off. Later though, Wilmer takes Spade at gunpoint to meet with Gutman again. Spade overpowered him, but he meets with Gutman anyway. Gutman then tells Spade everything he knows about the Maltese Falcon, and he throws a few different numbers at him, but I think the eventual deal he offers is like 25% of however much he sells the Maltese Falcon for. And Spade's like, okay, well, what do you mean? What do you want? Like how much would that be? Gutman tells him, well, it could be as little as $1 million, meaning you would get 25% of that. And Spade's like, and what would you say the maximum is? And Gutman's like, I couldn't say. I wouldn't dare to guess. And then the value that this Falcon would find. And Spade would eventually pass out because they roofied his drink, damn it. After he comes around, he finds a newspaper with a ship from Hong Kong circled in it. And when he goes to investigate, we find out that ship is on fire. And then just to speed the story along, when he goes back to his office thinking all is lost, that a man who we would find out is the captain of the ship, who has been shot, just manages to make it to Spade's office. There's literally no reasoning given for why this guy would come all the way to Sam's office. But he dies in the office holding a bundle of newspapers that's like wrapping around something. And it's revealed that the captain had the Maltese Falcon. So, at the same time, O'Shaughnessy calls the office, she gives an address, and then screams, she told Effie that, but then Spade's just like, alright Effie, here's what you're gonna do, you're gonna call the cops and you're gonna tell them everything that happened except I'm the one that answered the phone, and I didn't tell you, and I only told you what you needed to know. And then he, like, basically sends her on her way. And then we get this whole, like, standoff thing. And Spade said it best, because, like, during the standoff, Gutman, Wilmer, and Cairo are all working together. They're holding up O'Shaughnessy and for holding up Spade. But when Spade went there, he hid the Falcon. He hid it so no one else would know where it was. So Spade's just like, yeah, well, I know where the Maltese Falcon is, so you're not going to kill me. So, therefore, you have no way of threatening me. And Gutman's like, well, there are ever forms of threat other than death. And Spade's just like, yeah, maybe, but those are only effective if the promise of death is there. And again, I know you're not going to kill me. So here's what I want. I want some money. I think he asked for like 10 grand. And then he also is like, not only that, but I need a fall guy because someone killed Archer and Fursby. And at this point, with Iva freaking telling cops that he murdered his own partner, he's just like, I am in deep. I'm going to get arrested. I need a fall guy. That is the price that I'm asking for this goddamn Falcon. And eventually, after a struggle, it is agreed that Wilmer the Hitman is going to take the fall for it. Because I think they said Wilmer... I think Wilmer did genuinely kill Fursby, but we'll get into who killed Archer in a minute. So after that, Spade had called his secretary Effie to bring him the bundle. He tells her where it is. And then Gutman and Cairo are, like, getting ready to lose it because they're like, oh my god, we finally have it. We paid so much money for this. And Gutman proceeds to scrape at the black paint on the Falcon. Because, you know, there's jewels underneath, right? Except, there's no jewels. It's actually lead. And, like, I love it because they're like, all right, Spade, give me my money back. And Spade's like, I held up my end of the deal. It's your bad luck that this wasn't what you thought it was, not mine. And, like, it gets really heated, and they pull a gun on him, and Spade's just like, all right, here, I'll give you, like, 800, and I'm keeping 200 for my time and expenses. And freaking Gutman's like, all right, you know what? That's fair. And then everyone leaves. And then Spade calls the cops, because Wilmer at some point got away. But he's like, screw it, I'm throwing them all under the bus. And then before the cops come, because apparently they have a very quick response time, Spade grabs O'Shaughnessy, and he basically calls around and is like, I know you killed Miles. Tell me right now. And she basically admits that she thought Fursby was going to betray her, so she called on Spade and Archer to follow her, thinking that Fursby would lose it and tackle Miles, and then it was a win-win. If Miles died, oh well, she can now throw Fursby under the bus and he'll get arrested. If Fursby dies, great, problem solved. But instead, Fursby didn't go after Miles, so O'Shaughnessy had to basically improvise, grab Fursby's gun and shoot Miles, and then later Wilmer would shoot Fursby, which left her without any fall guy. So she basically, we have a nice tense exchange between Sam and O'Shaughnessy, and where she basically is like, if you love me, you won't throw me to the wolves. And he's just like, I do love you, baby. And and when you get out of the jail in 20 years, I'll be waiting for you. And it's like, what? And he basically just tells her like, listen, I'm only going to tell you this once. If you don't understand, that's tough. But I got to tell you. Miles was my partner. When your partner's getting killed, a man's gotta do something. It ain't right just letting his killer go out there walking free. A man's gotta do something. So I'm sorry. But no matter how I feel about you, yeah, you're done. And when the cops come, he gives them all the guns. Here's all the evidence you need. She killed Miles. Take her away. And that's it. That's the film in a nutshell. It was an hour 41 minutes, but it's fast paced. It's black and white. There's a lot of there's combat, but I would more call it slapstick because I was laughing at every punch that was thrown. But yeah, this was a nice film, and I am gonna get into fun facts. I am gonna get into questions, but I teased it before. We do in fact have JP here, so I'm going to get JP in, I'm going to run a sponsor, and we're going to give you those fun facts and questions. And I'm back with JP.
I had to let the suspense be there because we were watching such a suspenseful movie.
They did not let the action stop once.
A little. It's got that old, it's got old pacing, but it's got pace. It's good. It's, yeah.
All right, so JP wasn't here for the plot discussion, but he got to watch the movie. You ready for some fun facts before we dive into these questions?
I am a happy friend to have fun with. Let's have fun.
All right, fun fact number one. The film saw critical success as it was nominated for 3 different Academy Awards.
Fuck yeah.
And was one of the first 25 films to be included in the National Film Registry.
That doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, it's right there next to a lot of others, some other, like, Bogart things, like Casablanca.
Yes.
And or Citizen's Kane, but I don't think Bogart was in Kane.
I wanted to do Casablanca, but then I was like, I don't think that counts as a mystery. I think that's more like just a romance.
It's more of a romance. I would say it's much more of a romance than this movie.
Oh, God, yeah.
This movie felt... Actually, well, it developed... The romance developed much better than, I'd say, Morbius.
Yeah.
From what I've watched recently in terms of a love story being fucking shoved into a narrative.
Right.
Morbius was shit, and I think we all can agree and still agree with that. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Thank you.
All right. Fact number two. When it came to writing the novel... This is based on a novel.
So the novel came first?
Yeah, the novel came first. This is
I gotta know about this author because holy fuck, this feels very like Sherlock. Feels like a Sherlock mystery.
So when it came to writing the novel, Hammett, the author, said he based many of the characters on people he had met throughout his time working at the Pinkerton Detective Agency. However...
Oh, that's a fun background.
However... Yeah. The main character of Samuel Spade has no real-life counterpart. Instead...
Was he a fever dream of the, like, the epitome of the masculine macho man of America in the 1940s?
Instead being inspired by the aspirations of what many detectives wanted to be, and in some cases believed themselves to be.
Well, Bogart's the fucking face for it, I guess. Holy shit.
I love how spot on you were. It's like, yeah, pretty much.
All right, so I think I got the gist of the movie then.
All right.
I think I got it if I nail there.
I love hearing all of these like, I was able to make this movie because I literally write this book actually because I worked at a detective agency.
Yeah, and I think if that's going to say anything about artists in general is that come from all walks of life.
Yeah.
And no matter what kind of life you're living before you as an artist, everything kind of plays into effect.
Like a modern day example I want to put out is this is a comic book actually, but...
Oh, that's not art. Don't talk about that.
Listen here, asshole. Tom King. I don't know if you're familiar with Tom King. He's done a lot of stuff. The first book I ever read by him was Grayson. And it's like Dick Grayson becoming a super spy. Tom King literally was a spy. He literally had time in secret services.
I wish that was on my resume, but instead I'm just a zipline guide.
I don't know, write a fucking survival story about...
Yeah, like, I'll do the new 127 hours, is it?
You're just stuck in the middle of a zipline with no one else there, and it's winter. I don't know why you're ziplining in winter, but whatever.
Yeah, I don't know why I would be, but I could definitely, like... I could imagine a scenario and the equipment that it would have on me.
Doesn't even have to be you. It could just be a stupid teenage kid like, no one can tell me what to do. I'm going to zip line in winter.
True. I mean, all right. Yeah, no, I already got an idea. Like, the kid goes on one zip and we're like, hey, you can definitely become a guide at some point, but you got to be 18 and he's 17 and he's fucking pissed. He's like, fuck the rules. I saw how you guys did it and he went and did it at night. Definitely can't happen in the winter. It definitely would add some nice, like, environmental, like, deal. But I do know for a fact we have black bears in our area.
Oh, gosh.
So, and turkeys that can fly as high as the lines are.
Oh, damn.
We had one almost hit a zipper once.
Fun fact 2.5.
Oh, please. Simply, I was giving my own weird fun facts.
Well, this is about that. Fun fact 2.5, not to do with the movie, but... Fun fact 2.5 about writing, simply because I gave him an idea, I now get credit for writing the book.
Oh, biscuits, and it is recorded. Damn it. What if I hit this X on your tablet right now?
I can still save it.
Well, I ain't gonna let that happen. I'm gonna snap this.
This is gonna be the end of a Maltese Falcon. Like, I need a fall guy, say.
You need a fall guy, huh? Right in the sack.
Right in the solar plexus. All right. Fun facts number 3. John Huston's directing style is a big credit to how well the film turned out. He was very methodical, making shot-by-shot notes in the script. Good. Like, literally, like, he had his script, you almost couldn't read a script anymore. He had so many notes in it, apparently.
I love that. That's a fun script to read.
And as well as advocating for shooting in sequence, he did not shoot a single scene out of sequence, which made the actors' jobs easier.
I was going to say that that's definitely nice for the actors. I mean, if you look at any, again, all that I've really talked about on this on the podcast format is Marvel, and Marvel does a lot of out-of-sequence shoots.
Oh, God,
I mean, you can definitely feel those reshoots in WandaVision, but the multiverse.
I remember with, not Marvel, but Game of Thrones, where the rumor was they would literally film sequences that would never make it to air just to fight spoilers.
Yeah, I don't doubt that kind of tactic to fend off spoilers.
Right?
People are always about it.
This movie came out in a time when there were no spoilers. Like,
well, the idea, yeah, like film was so infant. It was a baby, and I mean, I'm sure people were pissed if you, like, spoiled the new Bogart film.
Right.
But, you know, it's, I don't know, it's a little odd. But what I would say is, that's me thinking aloud, kind of loudly, not to suppress any noises in this room. I don't know what I was actually just saying.
I'm just thinking, I was thinking to myself, like, I don't know if this applies to you. I am a bit older than you, but the term spoiler was not a universal thing, man. Like,
what do you mean? Oh, yeah, because it's on the back of vehicles. That weird thin.
Yeah, like, I feel like they didn't apply the word spoiler to, like, movies until, like, around my, I think it was, like, for when I was 13 going on 14, like, I feel like that's when I first heard the word spoiler enter the lexicon.
I mean, that's it would make sense for when it entered your lexicon,
right?
But I do wonder, I don't know, I don't really believe that there could have been a true big need to you know, like, have the spoiler warning, because
right?
I think it's also about distribution of movies and how that's grown. I mean, just the culture and distribution of films have expanded. Even, like, I know that some of our parents talk about the moment that they saw Star Wars, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's, like, it's fun to think about how those are, like, big moments. And I bet if I asked my grandparents about their big film moments, aside from Jaws, would probably be something down this line of the Blancas.
When did Jaws come out?
Jaws was not in, like, the 40s.
I was going to say, like, those were two different decades.
And my family, Jaws is, like, everything. They don't care about anything that was made before Jaws, in a way.
We might have to do a horror hotel on Jaws now.
Absolutely. That's a freaking great movie.
You ready for fun fact 4?
I'm ready now.
Okay. While Huston would acquiesce to the advisements of removing sex scenes...
Thank you.
He heavily advocated to keep the excessive use of alcohol, which, by the way, I didn't think if there was an excessive use of alcohol in this film, but whatever.
I mean, yeah, I guess for standards back in the day, but yeah.
He would argue that the novelization of Sam Spade could put away half a bottle of liquor a day, and to have him abstain on screen would be a falsification of his character.
Oh my God, this is just being like, no, he's a man, he drinks alcohol, at least half a bottle.
He has to,
like,
drink.
Okay, Mr. Huston, we'll do it.
Ain't talking half a bottle of schnapps either. This is hard fucking liquor.
Yeah, I feel like I saw a lot more smoking.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of smoking.
And I think...
Indoors,
yeah. That was very, very common. I think it was considered healthy to smoke then. I
I think so. I think back then they didn't.
I definitely know that there was a moment of switching and going like, oh shit, things are bad for us.
Yeah, I love how the medical field works a lot of times back then, especially if you go back.
It's quite literally human trial and error.
Literally, like, oh hey, you have a headache? Just snort some cocaine real quick, okay?
That might work. I mean, it worked for me for a while until I had that really bad headache about a day later, but. Makes it feel good in the minute, so yeah. Do that and maybe swig some whiskey while you're at it.
Yeah,
and then they die of a heart attack because I don't know.
Completely unrelated though.
Yeah, completely unrelated and definitely doesn't have to do anything with that cocaine that they snorted.
For legal purposes, these are jokes.
Yeah, these are jokes. I hope that is as seen. What was that fun fact again?
Basically just how Huston...
The alcohol. Yeah.
Huston would literally just go to bat and be like, no, I am staying true to this. He wanted there to be sex scenes, but he was like, all right, fine. I don't want that R rating. Like,
Yeah, I just... I'm glad that there was no sex scenes. Because I was gonna... This movie really felt like a nice like moment in time. It was nice to like look into it. It's like it was looking through a time machine. What's the word I'm looking for here?
Standards?
Yeah, the societal standards are very different.
I was very much...
smoking indoors, making... Just, like, how... the daily life, day-to-day. Like, it really felt different, and you can... I don't know, it just felt so old school.
Speaking of societal standards, I was very much waiting for someone to smack the shit out of O'Shaughnessy.
I'm glad that they didn't, and that O'Shaughnessy actually was, like, a villain type of sorts.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it was kind of weird on how Bogart had to be the one to villainize her. Bogart played an interesting role of, like, charisma roles. He passed a lot of checks. And then failed one fun one with Cairo.
Right?
In the movie.
I love how he did not catch on, even though Cairo didn't outright...
Puts a gun on him.
Cairo didn't even outright lie to him. He was just like, oh no, I'm not gonna tell you who I work for.
Mm.
Oh hey, it's the guy that you dislike. Like,
yeah, and it's nice that in the moment, like another good shot that they had in the movie was just like keying us in, adding a little suspense, being like, oh, we just saw Cairo walk into the Gutman's office and... Bogart or Spader didn't see. Fun. What was the other? I had something else, but you can talk.
I was gonna move on to the last fun fact. While Humphrey Bogart would create the entire private dick archetype in this film, he was not the original choice. Originally,
I guess I'm a little surprised by that.
Originally, the role was offered to George Raft, who...
I don't know. I'm going to look up his face.
Go for it. George Raft would turn the role down, both because he did not want to work with an inexperienced director, and he had a stipulation in his contract that stated that he refused to work on remakes. George Raft would actually go on to become infamous for turning down multiple roles to what would become very successful films.
Man, that sounds like me reading a script and making a decision, just not doing
well.
You know
what? It's a remake? No, I don't think I'll do it. No. Well, it's a very successful remake. You literally... the original film... What's up? Are you reading up on
him? Yeah, I'm looking through his filmography. And he was in the 1932 of Scarface.
Oh, Jesus.
He definitely has, like, this, like, what people would be like, this is that American look.
Yeah.
Like, before even...
Wasn't Scarface...
Like, the likes of De Niro or...
Wasn't Scarface supposed to be Italian?
Yeah, but do you think early filmmakers, especially early white filmmakers, cared about... portraying ethnicities correctly on the screen?
Man, I bet you the mafia had a lot to say about that.
I mean, I'm sure, but I'm sure they still were like, hey, you were right about one thing, and it's the gun we use.
Scarface would have fucked anyone up. That was the one thing.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. The other thing I was going to say is, like, I don't know, I feel like this is, like, really early, like, before the moments where we have big celebrities. I mean, Bogart was, like, right at the beginning, but then
yeah.
I feel like people like Burt Reynolds really changed the
the
ideal American man look.
The American man. Because
up until what we saw, it has just been slicked back, Humphrey Bogart. And we're talking in the transatlantic.
Yeah.
A little bit.
No, same here, see?
Yeah. Also, the old telephones. This has been so fun to watch them just fucking hitting the rotary. And it's like, I'm wasting 12 seconds typing in this long-ass phone number.
Oh my god. That people could actually hold a conversation while dialing a number back then, because it's like, chances are this conversation is going to be over before I finish.
Basically.
But I love how they did. It was also at the time where they didn't have to dial zero for operator, necessarily. They could just be like, ding, ding, all right, I know the number.
Yeah, that definitely didn't happen. I do wonder how much this film influenced other films.
Right?
Was this one of this? It's in black and white, so I guess you could consider it noir, right?
I mean, this is film noir
because I mean it was black and white, and it was a mystery about death and shootings and blah 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 blah.
I'm gonna look up the definition of film noir real quick, because I don't think it has to be black and white to be film noir.
Fair, but it definitely.
Let's see, a style or genre of cinematographic film marked by a mood of pessimism, fatalism, and menace.
Yeah. Okay, that had it.
Okay. Yeah. The term was originally applied by a group of French critics. No wonder. To American thriller or detective films made in the period 1944 to 1954.
Well, this predates.
Yeah,
this is an early precursor.
So this wouldn't have even been called film noir at the time that it came out.
That's kind of interesting.
Dang. Okay, film marked by mood of pessimism, fatalism, and menace. Okay.
I mean, based off that, I mean,
he was very pessimistic, and we also got to see a lot of death. Well, we got to see a death.
Yeah, like, there was definitely violence on the screen.
Some violence that was unintentionally humorous at times.
Yeah, they gotta get a better stunt coordinator.
That slapstick, though, like,
I honestly, it was more comical watching them, like pretend to slap them, and they're actually just beating their chest.
You'll get slapped and you'll like it, see?
Bam, 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 bam. And it's only all in the, like, not even towards the face. It was really funny to watch, and you're like, ugh.
And you didn't even pull your head. Right?
Come on, Cairo.
All right.
But, you got questions?
Yeah, I know you're short on time, so I didn't know if you wanted to jump right into the questions now or not. Or did you have anything else you want to say about this film?
I definitely will have more to say if you got those questions, so.
I mean, I only got three questions for this one.
Okay.
And to be fair, I mostly stole these from looking online. I was like, all right, I gotta pull. I'm not of this period or this, and I'm not super familiar with old school noirs, so I had to pull a bit.
Old school pre-noirs.
This one's definitely a philosophical one.
Okay, I love it.
Is Sam Spade a hero or an anti-hero?
He's an anti-hero.
I know, that's what I thought immediately.
Absolutely.
I feel like it's like, okay, why? What are we just classifying as an anti-hero versus a hero?
Because he fucks like Deadpool, so he obviously is an anti-hero.
It's only implied that he only bangs once. He might have had an affair with his partner's wife, but
yeah, I think that was very possible. I don't know. It was a web. There was a lot of string.
That was such a like subtle, not subtle, but it was such a sub story. And I'm just like, why did that not get visited more often? I feel like that was something that had to get cut quite a bit.
Yeah, I bet that was a little more fleshed out in the novel.
Yeah, that had to be like just getting attacked from all sides like that. Like, all right, we think you killed this guy. Now we think you killed your partner because his wife wanted a divorce because she wanted to be with you.
God, I gotta say that sometimes when that happens so early in the movie, I'm like, I don't even know your fucking names yet. I'm still
right.
I need every character to greet you very weirdly and always say,
"Hey there, Humphrey."
Yeah, like, sorry, Humphrey Spade. Bogart, it's nice to see you.
Hey
there, detective, you work upstairs, right?
Hey there, Sam Spade.
Hi, I am Bridget O'Shaughnessy.
She even gave a fake name in the beginning, too.
Did she?
She had, like, two fake names, and that, like...
It's hard to tell because Spader, or Spade, Bogart's character, continuously called every female on set Precious. Precious, I got you good. Don't worry.
I think the first name she gave was Ruth Wonderly, and then at some point she gave another name when she was caught making a phone call. Like,
damn. I mean, that makes sense because she was also a bit shady. She was.
Oh yeah.
She was making some. Spade even knew that she was lying at the start.
Yeah.
Which he didn't really tell us until later.
We didn't believe you. We believed your money. Like.
Yeah. We only believed you for $200, baby.
Yeah, you paid us more than you would have if it was the truth, and you paid us enough to not care. Like, like, dang, okay.
But, yeah, so like that's pretty much a direct quote right there of a line from Spade, and that just really kind of shows he's more of an asshole than a good guy.
Yeah.
But the only like good thing about him is that he's there to help other people and trying to find that truth. So to speak.
He does definitely have morals. Like, some people would say anti-hero because he's doing this for money, but did he even get any money in the end?
I don't think so.
Like, he took money.
And he gave it back. He took a lot of money from Bridget.
Yeah.
Bridget.
Yeah, her name was Bridget.
And he took a lot of money from her. At least like $700.
He took five. It was $500.
It was $500.
Right. Yeah, first she gave him $400 because he was like, "How much do you have left?" Oh no, wait, you're right. Collectively, it was $700 because she gave him $200 at first.
Right.
And then he's like, "How much money do you have left?" And she's like, $500. And then she gave him $400, and he's like, "Where's the other bill?" And she's like, "Well, you can't expect me to make with nothing." And he was like, "Huh, what do you have?" And she's like, "I have jewelry." He's like, "You'll have to hawk it." And he just takes the other $100.
Like, he just. Straight up is yoinking this woman's money.
He did not care.
As far as we know in the movie, she's, like, in distress, just lost her husband, like...
At this point, he did call her out for lying a few times,
but not for everything that he knew, or not for everything that she had done. It's just super funny that this... He's definitely an anti-hero, just because he's a dick.
He's such a dick. He's literally the private dick.
He's a dick... But he's handsome and he talks good.
Yep.
And, like, that's enough to be liked and, you're safe as this white man here.
Right. All right, question number two.
Yes.
What do you feel this film says about individualism?
Oh, that greed changes people, for sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, even himself, when he was, like, I feel like he sold her out for the money at some point.
He was,
but then like turned back on it because he was like, "No, that's not the right thing to do."
Well, at one
I
point,
need money. I just need a clear name because you know what's worse is having an empty desk because your partner's gone and you don't know who killed it.
Right,
killed them. I gotta put you away, sweetie. Sorry if you come back in 20 years. Then maybe something can happen.
Yeah, because
until then, you're shit out of luck, baby.
In the end, she literally does say, like, "What would you have done? Would you have still sold me out if you had like the $1 million, or if the statue was real?" And
that's a really great question to ask in the end.
And I don't even know if he gave a straight answer. He's like, "It would have just been another thing on your side." And she's like, "If you really loved me, you wouldn't need that on my side." Like,
and yeah, he doesn't love her. I don't think he really even loved her.
I know.
I think he saw a moment to kiss her and took it because he was feeling horny.
What more could I bribe you with if not money? And then he just literally plants one on her.
Yeah, it's just, it's kind of gross in that respect. Definitely not a love movie.
Right?
Remember,
this movie literally shaped a generation of men that were like, women True. Love it when you just put your hands on them and force yourself on them.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues.
I'm not gonna say this movie is solely responsible for that.
No. Yeah. But it definitely is an exhibit of that kind of mentality just capsulized in this movie.
It's almost bad too that she ends up being the villain because in a way that's almost like saying she deserved it.
Yeah, it definitely does. Like that she deserves it and. Women aren't right. or something. I don't know, that some misogynistic line. I don't have that.
There were three women in this entire film, and the only one that didn't.
I'll say the main Astor? Mary Astor, I think, is the.
I think Mary Astor was the actress, and
it was Bridget.
Yeah, she played Bridget.
I mean, for being she is a leading lady. I think she's on the poster with Bogart.
Yeah.
But in terms of having just a role, just being in Hollywood at the time, that's nice to see. I'm sure. Oh God, I just don't even want to think about the culture of that industry in that time period for
the casting couch.
I don't even say that right.
Go. It is a cliche for a reason.
It is a cliche for a reason because it started then. Oh, golly.
Hollywood.
Hollywood, baby. That's Hollywood.
Oh, God.
I hope it's not like that anymore. I hope we got all the Weinsteins out.
We can hope. But yeah.
Can we go on to the next question? I'm getting sad now.
There you go.
bottom line, I think greed corrupts people and distorts their true direction.
Okay.
That's my answer.
So this one's a bit more of a fun one. It's a bit more of a practice one.
Let's get some levity.
This is definitely good. This one I don't even have an answer for, and I wrote this question.
Lovely.
If a remake of this film were made today, who would you cast as Sam Spade?
I don't like that I instantly thought of our boy Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, man, Benedict Cumberbatch as...
It's mostly because as I was watching this, I felt like this was a Sherlock episode. It just felt like Sherlock in general. I don't know, who you thinking after I said Benny?
I don't know, man. Oh, my gosh.
Well, is this... Okay, it's going to be an American remake. Also, I said this felt like Daredevil when we were watching it.
Well, you think... Are you saying...
Quite literally, it felt like Daredevil.
You saying Charlie Cox?
Fuck it, yeah. Let's get Charlie Cox back
in. Charlie Cox could be a good choice.
Miles Teller's doing good lately.
Yeah, you know what? I think I was...
He looks like a grown man.
He's
in his 30s, right?
I was starting to think of him because I was like, who played Mr. Fantastic in that terrible remake? Like...
Yeah, actually, fuck this. I don't want a white guy in there. Let's change that.
Oh, okay, so we're going to change the whole color. In that case, Idris Elba. First thing that comes to my mind.
I do like him. He's got a good voice.
Idris Elba.
Have you seen him as Sonic 2 yet?
I haven't. When he plays Knuckles? Yeah. I haven't even seen the first Sonic.
I haven't either.
I really should. Have you seen the Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers movie?
No, but I heard that they have ugly Sonic.
They have ugly Sonic in the film. I haven't even seen it.
Weird.
I haven't even seen it.
Ugly Sonic, and then there's Sonic, and then, like, all different kinds of Sonics.
Here's Metal Sonic.
Yeah.
Shadow the Hedgehog. We just went so off track.
Yeah, let's get out of this hedgehog hole.
Oh, gosh.
What'd you say, casting?
I
want Florence Pugh.
If it was a female Sam Spade,
to play Bridget.
Play Bridget.
Yeah.
I love Florence Pugh, honestly.
Yeah, she's been on a fucking hot streak lately. I want to continue it.
What about Jennifer Lawrence? Because I think she played a similar character in American Hustle.
I haven't seen American Hustle, but to being a similar style or a similar... movie. I think, no, I mean, why not? She could play whoever, the other person. What was her name? I guess Effie, like the secretary, but I don't know. Who's the other character? I'm gonna out you right now. Are you eating on the podcast? Are you giving us some good ASMR? Because I think we are. Yeah, I'm outing
you
right now.
For those
you know who I think we should cast? That Fry as Wilmer.
He's the fall guy.
He's the fall guy. He's the frat guy.
So for those wondering why the door's been opening and closing, Cicely's been coming in and out with food, and I finally demanded food, and I somehow picked the crunchiest fry on the plate.
I don't know. You guys might have been able to hear Cicely just smacking down on one of those. Let's be really quiet and give it the loudest chomp you got.
Okay, wait.
You're going to have to speak up.
Ooh, that was a good one.
I might have got that one.
I'm gonna tell you right now, the mic didn't pick that up.
Fuck.
It's okay.
Well, I hope everyone enjoyed that moment of silence.
I know why I didn't pick it up. It's because she's literally perfectly aligned with the part of the mic that's not recording.
Good. Like this is happening again? Are you really doing this to her? Purposefully cutting her out of the recording? I'm getting this off track.
Deb, she's going to be cast as Effie. I'm Sam Spade. That's just all it is.
Yeah, fuck it. Let's make this a local production.
That also means
That
also means you're going to be the one that dies in the beginning of the film.
I'm totally okay with that.
For once, I'm not the one that dies.
I was going to say, I've only died at the end of a show. I've never died at the beginning.
I've died in the beginning of a show.
I know. I was there. I watched your dead body die and not come back.
Yeah.
Actually, I watched you die twice. No, only once. That was a weird show. I love you, Larissa and Craig, but that was a weird one.
The less I say about it, the better.
That's all I'm going to say about it.
Oh my gosh.
Give me that third question.
This was the third question.
That was the third question?
Who would you remake as... And who would you cast as...
Let's really get down into this.
I want
Oscar...
Oscar Isaac?
I want Oscar Isaac to be Sam Spader.
Spade. But what if Oscar Isaac was Cairo?
Nah, I think we need to get... Oh, okay. How about Lakeith? I think Lakeith Stevens is his name?
Who? Keith Stevens?
Let me look him up real quick. I need to make sure I'm getting his name right. Ooh. We gotta keep talking. This is... Oh, Stanfield. Lakeith Stanfield. He's Cairo. He's... For the folks at home, he's in Atlanta.
Dang. Okay.
And Sorry to Bother You, Judas the Black Messiah, and in Get Out. Oh yeah, he was in Get Out. You saw Get Out, right?
I don't think so.
Oh my god.
Oh no, wait, is that the horror movie?
Yeah.
Oh god, no, I did not watch that.
What? Come on, man.
Jordan Peele is an amazing director and visionary.
Yeah, he is, and I can't wait for more of his thrillers that he's making.
And it is
A24.
It's for that reason that I am not going to watch any of them.
Oh man, you're missing out on like great, like, okay, this was a great movie. Like, what did we just watch? Maltese Falcon?
Yes. That's what we just watched.
Well, I'll say Get Out surpasses it, in my opinion. Not with the critic scores, though, from what I'm comparing. On Rotten Tomatoes, Maltese Falcon got a nice round 100%.
Oh my goodness. Apparently last year, for the 80th anniversary of Maltese Falcon, they actually brought it back to theaters.
That's cool. I know that, like, some theaters that I've worked at before, have done that. They'll play old stuff. Like, I watched the movie Metropolis at a theater, at a really nice old theater.
I also forgot that
you
this
watch
was a
Metropolis.
I also forgot that this was a Warner Brothers film.
Yeah, that was fun to see at the very end.
Warner Brothers, that just sparked something. Henry Cavill as Sam Spade.
Okay, yeah, no, I could do that because didn't he just play Sherlock?
He did just play Sherlock.
Fuck yeah.
Screw it, Robert Downey Jr. as Sam's Bane.
Yeah, no, I would take it. I mean, we're getting out of the what I would assume was the age. How old do you think Sam was? Like 30 at least?
I would have thought 30s, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Let's see, how old was Sam Spade?
God, there was so much smoking and, like, licking of the rolled papers in that movie. It felt a little homoerotic sometimes.
I have no idea. Also, homoerotic, I think I feel like there was at one point a homosexual scene.
Really?
I think there was in the 1931 film, and they were like, no, we don't want that for the 1941 film.
Yeah, we're progressive. We don't show that gay stuff here.
Yeah, apparently. Goodness gracious.
Emergency services have driven by.
Yeah, for some reason, when my window is closed, you can still hear everything on the street if you were right next to the street.
Well, you do live very close to the street.
But the room is the furthest room from the street.
That's fair. But I feel like on a good day, we can still see the road.
We could see the road, yeah, but it's a room with a view. Anyway.
That's fair. It is it's a good room with a view that I peered into today.
Yeah.
I thought about texting you, but I was like, honestly, it'd be funnier to just show up at your window.
Right. Oh, man.
I hoped to scare you, but I don't think I scared you.
I saw you in the corner of my eye.
Fuck.
But yeah. So, so we cast Sam Spade somewhat. We didn't come to a definitive answer, but we thought about it.
Who should get shot? Who's Archer? Miles Archer.
Oh, gosh.
I think we should cast
Jonah Hill.
Okay. For sure. That would make me instantly feel for the movie. And...
I literally just follow the first person I'd like to see shot.
Yeah, that's rude. I love Jonah Hill.
I don't know. There's just something about him where, like, almost any role he's in, I'm like, I immediately dislike this person. Like,
and he's doing good, I think.
As long as
when
he's...
When I feel that about someone, I'm like, oh, God. So they're really exuding that I hate you energy.
As long as he's...
Have you, like, seen him in, like, interviews? Like, like, not acting, you know?
No, I don't think I have. I think I might have seen clips here and there, but I don't think I've seen, like, a full-blown interview.
I've been really getting into that lately. I know I'm just kind of, like, babbling at this point.
It's fine.
Okay, cool.
If you got time, then we're here.
Yeah, I got some shit to say.
We didn't have you for the plot discussion, so...
So, yeah, you gotta get your healthy dose of Justin's rambles that sometimes get lost in his own rambling brain.
Right.
Like me about to say, oh yeah, Jonah Hill. I like watching a lot of things, like, I mean, Hot Ones. I love watching Hot Ones. I don't know if you've ever seen.
Is that, that's the one where they eat like really hot nachos or something? Like
wings, hot
wings. It's hot wings. Wings. Okay.
Yeah. Hot nachos. Oh, that's the show I want to make.
The like chip challenge or whatever.
Welcome to the chip challenge. No, but
that's a thing. They got like they do have a legitimate chip challenge.
I don't doubt that.
I refuse to do anything spicy.
Oh, I don't blame. The first time I saw you take a sip of anything that wasn't really soda or water, which was actually was it vodka or rum that you tried that one?
It was rum. I definitely did not have. I've never had vodka.
Yeah, I don't think you could do. I think you would puke if you had vodka.
Like even just one shot, I'd be done.
Like I for sure think you would. Wretch.
I am the example that of the
straightest edge I've ever met.
I'm the example of the modern day man that people who grew up watching the Maltese Falcon hate.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because everyone in that movie was like, "Hey, I got a cigarette in one hand and a fucking martini in the other."
Pretty
what
much,
do you want, toots?
Not like, even martini. They would literally just have a whole ass bottle in their hand.
That's like, fair, yeah, and throw that around. Fun shows like Hot Ones can show you what I hope is the person's true personality. Or even you could watch, like, God forbid, Ellen or something. Actually, go watch someone like Conan O'Brien or...
I don't think Conan's around anymore.
Oh, he's still making shit.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I know he has a podcast.
Yeah,
but
I love his podcast.
I don't think he has TV anymore.
That's a shame. Conan, what's wrong? What's happening? I thought he was still growing strong.
Oh, no, they were, like, slowly edged him out. They put him on...
That's fair. He was in there since the 90s.
It was prime time, then it was, like 10.
93, I think, is when he was in there.
At one point, he was a midnight show, and I was like, oh, yeah, he knows. He knows that he's on his way out. Like,
yeah, but I think the podcast, at least, I don't know, I like him. I've come to see him or get to know him lately. And I say get to know because, you know, we have some weird ability to...
Imagine if a Maltese Falcon was made during the era of social media. Like
that would also change a lot of things. I was thinking about that when they were like... I mean, even the fact of like tracking people down, you would have
tailing.
To change.
Yeah, you physically tailing. Have to tail someone.
Yeah.
Change all your taxis. Like,
yeah, it was fun to see all that lingo and talk just, about. Like, all right, sweetie, so what I'm going to need you to do is... get off the taxi about halfway there on the bridge, find a new taxi, and then get several new taxis in between. You hear? That will make sure that the tail is off ya. And then when you get there, split up and find something new to wear. Something. Always something like that.
Literally, it's just like...
goes on and on.
They also deduct a lot of things out of nowhere, seemingly.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's no forensics back then. They were literally just like...
He's like, all right, so I believe he stood right here. Shot the guy with him facing him. He fell backwards, hit the fence, stumbled, and his jacket cushioned the fall until he died.
And it's just like, well, we watched it happen, so we know that that's true. But really, what the fuck did you pull from?
I can see them pulling from parts of the environment, but they were really just being like, "Yep, this is true. This is what we got to work on."
Oh yeah, that's
next scene.
Yep, that's exactly what we bought. Like,
which is kind of nice for the early scenes. We don't really need to see them like getting down, looking at every blade of
yeah. That's where
hairs,
that's where
granted,
the time period works.
That's where the time period definitely works, and it would only work then.
Because if we did that today, like this happened, yep, everyone in the theater would be like, "That's not how it works."
Yeah, we would. It would have to then become a like a true period piece for that modern film, like for them to be like, all right, we're setting this in this time frame, kind of like Quentin Tarantino's movie,
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. That's what it is. Yeah,
I haven't seen that. Maybe we get someone from that movie to play in one of those.
Does that count as a mystery? Does that movie count as a mystery?
I don't know. I haven't actually seen it.
At this point, I'm so mired in work. If there's a film I want to see, it has to be for the podcast. All
right. Let's think. I mean, Tarantino's definitely got some mysteries in there, I feel like.
I feel like Pulp Fiction counts as a mystery.
Yeah, I haven't finished that movie. Well, yeah, it definitely is, because it's all those several plots coming together. All
right, so thing. At some point, I'll put it on the list. We gotta do Mystery Motel, Pulp Fiction, and we'll...
God, I feel so, like, under... like, educated to ever talk about these, like, good films, but I'm so happy that someone might listen to this and say, I agree with your thoughts.
I agree with you.
Or, actually, no, I want someone to tear us a new one.
So it's just gonna be like, why the fuck did you say this?
You know, I'm gonna say,
put some goddamn hair on your chest.
Maltese Falcon sucked and is the worst movie ever.
Damn.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to stir the pot right
You're
now.
You're stirring the pot?
Stirring the pot. Stirring the pot. Why'd That's you, what Squirtle's saying.
Why'd
right
you
now.
Give Squirtle that voice?
This is what I did last time.
This is an
Look
audio.
His face.
This is an audio podcast.
I know this
sir.
Is an
they
audio platform.
They can't see him.
I'm gonna take a picture and, all right, tell me your phone number, audience member.
Don't
tell
do
me
that.
Right now. I'll give. I'll
don't
let
do
the
that.
Silence happen.
Don't do that. We don't condone this.
This is like how it feels so weird when you watch Dora and don't respond. You know, when Dora's like, "Where's the mountain?" and like it's very clearly behind her to the left, but she's like, "Where?" Looking around so silently for such an awkward time, so the kids can talk.
I was that kid that didn't talk back.
You didn't talk back?
No, I was just like...
I eventually did if I got annoyed with her. If I was, like, by myself, so I, you know, imagined
things. I feel like
things.
This has gone off the rails.
It definitely has. I hope people have liked this, like, 10 minutes of,
Bro.
Pseudo...
Bro.
Oh, I know, but, like, we've really stopped talking about Maltese Falcon about 10 minutes ago.
All right.
That's when we started with Sonic, you know?
I will say, the next episode that's going to release, it's already been recorded, so I know for a fact it's going to come.
Oh, shit.
It's the Multiverse of Madness podcast.
Oh, yeah, and we referenced it here, so boom, boom.
Which, we're going to have JP, and we're going to have Sicily.
Yeah, it's happening.
Sicily, who very briefly made a guest appearance on this episode, unplanned.
She did watch the end of the movie.
She watched the end of a movie, so it makes sense that she'd be here for the end of the podcast.
You know, I want Sicily to give us like her one word review, maybe a couple word review.
You're gonna have to move closer though. So
what
the,
you have seen.
So the mic
this
will
movie.
Pick. You can't turn. You're literally turning it away from her.
Oh, I didn't know what kind
know
of
how
bubble.
It works.
All right, in like 10 words or less, what's your thoughts on the ending of a movie? Don't yell it, Ethan.
I'm not gonna yell.
The suspense is killing me. I'm at the edge of my seat. If like people are driving. Like...
I enjoyed the bulbous man with the small gun.
Well, the bulbous man with the small gun. 10 out of 10. Well, you heard it here first, folks. Watch the Maltese Falcon.
That was another thing. How did that not make my fun facts? What did you guys think?
Bulbous man and the gun didn't
no,
make it
No,
what
did you guys think this movie was rated?
Oh, I said on the Rotten Tomatoes it got 100%. I dropped that.
That is correct. It got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I'm not too surprised. I mean, for the time, again, if we're talking about the era, and to briefly say like one last thing about it, this movie is tight in terms of storytelling. So
oh,
it's
yeah.
good. Like this is definitely a reference for like other things.
Suspenseful, labyrinthine, and brilliantly cast, The Maltese Falcon is one of the most influential noirs, as well as a showcase for Humphrey Bogart at his finest.
Who said that review?
I have no idea. It just says read critic reviews at the link.
Well, the critics said it.
That's the critics' consensus.
The consensus, right. Well, I don't know why they didn't talk about the bulbous man with the minigun.
Right?
Or the small gun.
Especially considering this was that bulbous man's first time acting.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, good for him. I could tell a little bit because he was quite stiff compared to Bogart.
I almost feel like he was meant to be stiff, just because he was literally... True. He was seated for over half this goddamn film.
Well, I mean, that definitely worked in the idea of, like, what I think is, like, the depiction of, like, classic American greed.
Yeah.
It's always got to be shown as a larger set individual because of the
as far
idea
as
of overindulgence of greed.
Recasting, Vincent D'Onofrio.
Is that the guy that does Kingpin?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Because, again, all the Daredevil parallels.
I love how I said that you were short on time a half hour ago.
Yeah, no, it's cool.
There's going to be consequences. I already know.
I mean, I can feel my tummy rumbling.
All right. Well, so your homework for next week, if you haven't seen it already, fucking catch Multiverse of Madness in theaters. So that way you don't, because we're gonna do all spoilers.
And there's two post credit scenes.
Yes,
they're both worthless except for the last one.
So in other words, stay through the whole fucking film. We're gonna, don't be an idiot. Freaking stay for the entire goddamn post credit scenes.
Actually, no. Fuck Marvel. Walk away from the post credit scenes. Look them up on YouTube.
What the fuck do they care? They already got their money.
I know. People will hear about this next week.
You'll hear his thoughts next week. You'll hear Sicily's thoughts next week. You'll hear my thoughts next week, maybe. I don't know.
Will we hear Robin's thoughts?
I don't know. I forget if she made the cut. Like, oh man, she's losing her shit over there right now.
Yeah,
though.
She's really fucking up that Q-tip and sock.
That's my manager telling me we got.
We're getting the rap signal right now.
In the words of Tony Schiavone, JP's gotta go home and feed his cats. I got a cat that's about ready to beat me down. We're out of time.